Mama said to Papa, be quiet as a mouse. Papa went up on top of the house. Made a lot of whoopee, made a lot of noise. Stood on the housetop with the rest of the boys. All the blues, they come, the blues, they go. Nobody knows where the blues come from. Blues, they come, and the blues, they go. And everyone's happy when the old blues go. All babies in the cradle, brothers gone to town, sisters in the parlor, flying up and down. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the housetop, but he won't come down. Old Pop saw a chicken out in the yard, picked up a rock, killed that bird, and it came hard. Now the chicken's in the gravy, and the gravy's on the bread. Oh, the blues, they come, the blues, they come. Nobody knows where the blues come from. The blues, they come, and the blues, they go. Everyone's happy when the old blues go.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. There's a man who needs no introduction, Eddie Holstein. Thanks for joining us, Eddie.
Oh,
it's been, it's been
to
too
see
long.
You. Way too long.
Tell us about that song right off the bat.
Oh, that's
going to try to take your picture. But
Leroy Carr and Scrapper Blackwell. Leroy Carr was an unusually wonderful blues musician. He's a piano player. So that song only has got three chords, but there's a lot of music in there. And he was something. He was a phenomenon. He wrote the song "An Evening When the Sun Goes Down." He was kind of like the Cole Porter of blues, and I got that song from the singing of Jim Queskin, and Jug Band used to do that song.
Well, you've been on the show before,
yes,
but I don't know if we've done like Eddie 101. Before we get into some current day stuff,
well, that's as far as I got in school.
So talk about, and I always think, every time I see you, I think about that walk we took.
We
walked around the South Side or something.
Hyde Park.
Yeah, for Astoria.
Yeah. Went to Jimmy's bar, which is now, I haven't been there in a long time, but I think it's all renovated, but they have toilet paper now.
Well, so what was it like growing up in South Shore?
It was great. It was a great neighborhood. I grew up originally in Chatham, though, 79th in Michigan. I lived on top of the drugstore there. Me and Jay Hergott were the first, only couple kids, because the war was just over for a couple of years and people were just settling in. There weren't that many kids in the building. My brother Fred, Jay, myself, Bobby Carlson, my dad had a drugstore.
Your dad had a drugstore.
So it was great growing up in the city. I just love the city. That's all I think about is I'd look out the window and there was 79th Street and all the little shops up and down 79th Street. Then we moved to South Shore.
And how old were you when you moved?
About 10 years old. But when we were in Chatham at 83rd Michigan, and Mahalia Jackson moved almost across the street, and I was totally aware who she was, and I was just so excited.
Now, how are you aware?
Because my brother Fred really got me into music. He started buying records. He was 4 years older than me, so I started buying records at the same time. It was just before the record stores exploded. Again, this is just right after the war, 51, 52. Fred is buying Guy Mitchell records. He was extremely popular at the time. I won a bet with David Bromberg on that. He sold 8 million records. He had all these songs. She Wears Red Feathers in the Hooli Hooli Skirt. And, just one hit after another. So we're buying the 78s, and I bought a Tony Bennett record, and I was like 7 years old.
Wow.
The music hit me right away.
Okay, now hold that. We got to take a break already. So then I want to get into how you got into the folk music.
Right.
So don't go away with Ed Holstein on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. We're here with Eddie Holstein. Eddie, you run the South Side. Were you a Sox fan or a Cubs fan?
Sox fan, about 1959. I listened to every game on the radio.
you know, was it Bob Elston on the Lloyd Pettit was the Cubs, I think. And, Jungo Jim Rivera. That was when a pitcher went 9 innings.
Yeah,
unbelievable. They brought in, there was like Turk Lown and Dick Donovan. I think that was it, you know, maybe one other. The South Side was great. And I mentioned Mahalia Jackson, and my brother Fred got me into the music. And I was very young. I have a long-term memory. I was born in 47, but I remember 1950 and 51 pretty clearly. I don't know why that is. And the Weavers had a hit called Goodnight Irene. Uh-huh. And there was a girl in our building called Irene Kawa that we all had a crush on. And that it hit me. That music hit me, and Fred bringing those records home. So I had bought, my first record was Tony Bennett. It was a Hank Williams song, Cold Heart.
Yeah, right. I remember. Well, yeah.
And I think he recorded a couple of Hank's songs, and From Rags to Riches. And then that's all I wanted to do was, you know, save my allowance and buy records.
Did stuff like that make you check the source out? I mean, we were all, you know, when Fats Domino died, we were talking about Pat Boone and stuff like that. Yeah. So you hear Bennett. Did that make you, were you aware of Hank Williams? Or
No. I don't think a lot of people were, because he didn't have any hits here. He wrote songs, and but it was so different back then, because your imagination, you didn't know what Tony Bennett looked like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came in a brown sleeve, you know, the 78s, and you had to be very careful with them or they're going to break.
Yeah.
And Guy Mitchell, for example, we didn't know what he looked like. So, you know, I thought he was this tall, you know, handsome guy, you know, and he was this short little fellow when I finally saw him on TV. But it was just all the song, everything belonged to you. There was no outside influences at all. You didn't know if they had a drug problem. You didn't know if they beat their sister. Nothing. So the song was yours. That's the difference. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but that's the way it was.
That's one thing Fred always said, and I'm sure you heard that around the house and when you ran the club, the Holsteins on North Lincoln. Your brother always said to understand the song. The song is really important.
Right.
And the songs you've done, Jazz Man and stuff, just talk about how that's played into your career.
Well, I was not a big songwriter. I never thought of myself. I used to fiddle around with melodies and arrangements of songs, and I wrote about five songs that I thought were pretty good. A few of them people did, but what I used to do is I played the banjo first, and I would take a folk song book, like Texas Folk Songs by the Lomax, and the language was so interesting to me. I mean, that's the way people spoke.
Yeah.
I would put a melody to it, and that's how I would first get the idea of a song. And then later on, I might put some words to it. Like Jazz Man was originally a spiritual called Down on Me. And I think it's a good tip for songwriters, you know, find some real interesting words. Well, we were nuts about rock and roll. I mean, it came in, and I bought every Jimmy Bowen, the one hit wonder.
Yeah, right.
I'm sticking with you, Buddy Knox. We like Buddy Knox a lot, and of course Elvis. And but I tended to like the more Afro-American stuff. Little Richard, you know, I loved him, and The Girl Can't Help It.
What brought you up to the North Side then?
We were always gravitating towards it because a lot of stuff was here.
Yeah.
As much as it was great to grow up in the South Side, everything was here. You turn on the radio and WFMT was over there on Wacker Drive. The Old Town School of Folk Music was at 333 West North Avenue, which completely confused the South Sider, because we needed four numbers to get home. We didn't know what 333 was. I came up here at 13. I was completely lost. A Second City. Everything that seemed real interesting was north. So that's what brought us up here.
And so what was your introduction then, like into the Old Town School? And
Fred came up here first and started singing around coffee houses and stuff. And he got a job at the Old Town Folklore Center. They opened up, the school opened up. Before that, we used to hang around the Fred shop. Yeah. It's a whole other story. Wonderful place. I sat there every day in the summer of August 1961 and listened to Michael Bloomfield play guitar.
Wow.
Every day.
Wow.
And I was a fly on the wall. I was 13. He was 17. But Fred got a job, and there was a wonderful guy named John Carbo, who was a banjo teacher, and he became the manager of the store, and he had a group called the Frets, who originally was Roger McGuinn, Jim McGuinn at that time, Lou McDonald, and John Carbo. Then a wonderful musician by the name of Guy Gilbert took Roger's place. Then Freddie replaced him. And so he was working at Folklore Center. He started performing more. So in the middle of high school, I got the job there. Everybody wanted that job, you know. And I was in heaven. So I used to take the IC down to Randolph, Michigan, and walk all the way to Wells Street, going through Rush Street and Wells Street, and 16-year-old kid thinking, wow, this is where I want to be.
Now, you're moving farther north on June 23rd, where you're going to be at Evanston Space,
right,
in performance with our friend Billy Prime, John's younger brother.
Yes.
First of all, what will you be doing? Will Billy have a band?
Bill's got a rockabilly band,
yeah.
And I'll be opening up with my little thing.
And what do you do?
I sing and I play guitar. That's what I've been doing.
You tell stories. Tell stories. You're a great storyteller.
I'm a little bit of a storyteller. Yeah. I do like that. I'm more of the actually a strong silent type, but nobody ever notices that. But anyway, so I'll be doing my thing. And then what's fun, Billy's got this great rockabilly band. He's just, John Prine, when I first met him, I knew Dave Prine because he was a teacher at the school. But John told me, you know, I have a younger brother who's a wonderful guitar player. He really admired his playing. So I'm looking forward to that. And Dave, I think, might be coming. So I'm going to bring my banjo, and we maybe hopefully we all get together and do some stuff, you know, at one point in the show. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Dave's been on the show.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He's a great guy. How did you meet the whole Prime family to begin with?
Well, through the school, the old school on North Avenue. The store was a huge store. It was a much bigger store. And the school was much smaller. And Dave would come in, and I was 16, 17. I didn't know John really well. I think I'd seen him. And then he got drafted, and I met him when he got out of the Army. I saw him at the Fifth Peg. He was doing the open mic there. And he sang those four songs. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Nobody could. And I ran and told Fred and Steve Goodman. And eventually, when John wrote a song, he'd go over to Fred's house and tape it for him. And Fred started doing it right away.
Really?
Yeah. There was two people that you knew that I met that I knew they were going to do something significant in show business. And that was John Prine and John Belushi.
Yeah.
Just knew it. You know, it's just, unfortunately, John only had a few years.
And how'd you meet Belushi?
He was at Second City, and I was at the Earl Holt Town.
Yeah.
And he used to come in, him and Joe Flaherty used to come in almost every night, and we would do, our favorite movie is On the Waterfront. And this is before the days so you can get it readily. You had to go see it at a revival theater.
Yeah.
And if it was playing, you know, oh my God. And somebody had a copy of it and a 60 millimeter, and they showed it to Wise Fools. John Belushi and I knew every scene in that movie. I could play Eva Maria Saint. I could play, Lee J. Cobb. He could play Brando. So
give me a little bit of what you guys did.
Well,
I know you're game for this.
What I did, and I wish it was recorded, it was mentioned in the book about John, called Wired.
Yeah.
I would say, John, get up on stage. Let's do On the Waterfront, the cab scene. But I would say, play Brando as if he was Truman Capote, which I can't do, but you can imagine. So I would start, I'd be Rod Steiger, and I'd be on stage at 3 in the morning, and I'd say, how much you weigh now, Slugger? When you were 161, you were beautiful. You could have been another Billy Conn. And then he goes on, it was you, Charlie. you and my brother, you should have looked after me in the Truman Capote voice. And we had people on the floor. But he could do that. And another movie we both loved was Rod Steiger played a movie, Al Capone, in a B movie, Allied Artists, and he could do every scene in that movie. So we had that connection.
Yeah,
we did movies together. He was wonderful, wonderful guy.
You know, I'm going to plug your classes maybe after. I don't know if I have time before the news, but you've stayed. You're a vital part of the scene. You teach all these classes at Old Town School.
I teach a couple of classes. Yeah. I usually craft myself. And there's one class on Saturday. All these people become very close friends of mine. They've been with me for a long time.
And I know you do work with Steve Dawson.
He's wonderful.
Yeah,
he's been on the show, I'm assuming.
Yeah, right, he has.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big question, but how is the scene now compared to when you were coming up? I mean, I'm hearing that maybe, I don't know if it's more compressed or a little tighter with networking and stuff. Is it more spread out now? Or
it's still part of the
scene.
It's different.
Yeah.
And it's great in its own way. In some ways, I can sit down on a stage or a house concert and sort of just play and talk. We had a lot of fun at the Earl of Old Town and all those clubs, but we're also younger. There's a lot of activity. You know, we're all drinking a lot and, you know, waitresses are moving around and people are ringing cash registers and, you know, we're part of a thing. And it was a hyperness to it.
Yeah.
And, I did okay every once in a while, but I really wish I could just sit and play certain songs. You couldn't do that. You had to be very aggressive on that stage, and I wasn't. I was more, you know, laid back, I think. So I sought other things, you know, running the club, but I never stopped playing guitar. Now I could do that. Mm-hmm. I could sit and do, like, Hesitation Blues.
Yeah.
You know, I could do lots of things.
You're a treasure.
Thank you.
I hope someone's taping this. This is great stuff. You're part of Chicago history. We're going to come back with more of Eddie Holstein. We're going to talk about Steve Goodman and the Steve Goodman songbook.
Wonderful.
So don't go away this on WGN.
Are losing their shirts. All of the brave Union soldier boys sleep in the dirt. You know and I know there never was reason to hurt. To begin with, here in Spoon River. All of the calico dresses, the gingham and lace, are up in the attic with grandfather's Derringer case. Whispered down in the parlor, a shadowy face. And the morning is heavy with one more beginning here in Spoon River. Come to the dance, Mary Perkins, I like you right well. The Union's preserved, if you listen, you'll hear all the bells. There must be a heaven, God knows I've seen only hell. My rig is outside, let us ride through the morning here in
Holstein, Spoon River, on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. So tell us about that song, Michael Smith. Steve Goodman popularized
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Steve was working in Coral Gables, Florida, and he was opening up for Mike and Barbara Smith. And yeah, Steve had a little baby at the time, so he got up early in the morning, and he always felt that if he had to do it, all of his, you know, low-life friends should do it, too. And we didn't have babies. And he called me one time. I just had been out all night, you know, frolicking. And I said, Steve, you know, it's 11:55 in the morning. I just came home. He said, you got to hear this song. And he played me Spoon River over the phone from Miami or some. Coral Gables, rather. And he just went crazy for Michael. And Michael is one of the great songwriters of all time. He lives right here in Chicago and has done so much and written so many great songs. And there you go. And they became very close and wrote some songs together. And this is one of them.
That song gives me goosebumps. And another one that went through Goodman was The Dutchman.
Oh, Michael Smith. Michael Smith. He goes back all the way to 1966, you know, Spanky and Art Gang recorded some of his songs.
Yeah, yeah.
We talk about a legendary guy. He's right out there. And he's so literate. I can't say enough about Michael Smith.
He's got a sense of humor. Didn't he do Elvis? He did Elvis imitators with Buffett. He did a throwaway 45 or something.
Yeah, he's hysterical. Yeah. He's a very funny guy. Yeah.
So I think this is really, really interesting, and we were talking during the break. So you're going to be teaching the Steve Goodman songbook 8 Mondays, 6:30 p.m., starting on June 25th. This is a great idea. No one's done this at the Old Town School.
I did my stuff. Steve did his stuff. I always did this. And there's a chicken cordon blues that I'm kind of doing an update on that I wanted to learn. I thought, God.
Get close to the mic there, Eddie. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Chicken cordon blues. I taught the class today, actually, that and the vegetable song.
Yeah.
Carl Martin did. But then he did, he wrote Chicken Cordon Blues. And, Linkin Park Pirates, Somebody Else's
Troubles.
You
do Go Cubs Go.
Yeah, I think we're probably gonna do that. It's a Bo Diddley beat.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The Linkin Park Pirates is, you know, even when he did that song in Cambridge, Massachusetts, people got it.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a towing problem. And I used to love to go to the great restaurant, the Seminary Lounge on Fullerton and Lincoln. And it was my home. And I ate there almost every day, usually late at night, because there were three owners, and my friend was Pete, who was a wonderful guy, and he came out at night. But I sometimes had supper there, and I'm having dinner with Steve, and I look across the room, and there's Ross Cassio. And I thought, yeah, he hung around there.
They're in the news, the Linkin Park touring. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, this is...
I think they're at the end of their run, finally. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, he's there, and he's staring at us. And he's got a big cigar in his mouth. And I said, Steve, listen, don't look now. Well, of course he did, you know, but Ross Cassio is staring at us. And
did he know who Goodman was to the song?
Yeah, big time, you know, big time. Because he was with one of the owners, Chris, who was his friend, and some of the drivers hung around there, and some were my friends. There were some good guys, but so he was with Chris, one of the owners, and he hung around there, and he knew who Steve was, and I said to the waitress, Kay, I said, can I have the check? And she said, it's on Ross. And before I know it, Ross Cassio is standing there, short, squat guy, and he says to Goodman with a big cigar, he says, I want to thank you. I can't tell you what you and Reichel did for my business. It went up 40% because they both, the song and then the column that Mike Reichel did, showed that these were very effective guys.
Uh-huh.
So people who had parking lots, you know, there's two sides to this thing,
yeah,
and wanted to get rid of it, these are the guys to go to. And he bought us dinner, and then he came to the Earl of Old Town and watched him perform. I was there.
I didn't know that story. Really?
Yeah, he came there. He came there, I think, with some of the guys from the seminary. He was a delightful, whatever. He was a charming kind of guy, and he loved Steve. You know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. He sang Linkin Park Pirates that night, and Russ was on the floor.
I was lucky. I interviewed Steve once, and I saw him a few times. And I've talked to Buffett about this a little bit, but talk about what Steve did. I don't know if you'll talk about this in the class, but Steve was such an entertainer.
Whoa.
You know what? And he, I mean, it kind of, to me, as someone kind of growing up with all that, he kind of took just this folk singer standing there strumming the guitar, and he became a real entertainer. The way he told Joe, he was just so fun to watch and stuff. Talk about taking that, putting that into folk music.
Well, the great person who brought folk music to America was the greatest entertainer of all, was Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
When you saw him, I don't care who you were going to sing, and you were going to learn about the world, and I never saw anybody like Pete Seeger. I saw him when my brother Fred was 11 years old, and they didn't use the word charisma back then, but I never saw anything like that. So Steve understood that right away, that that's what we had to do. That was a Chicago, it was unique to Chicago, because Bob Gibson was a real good entertainer.
Yeah.
You know, you told stories, you tried to look sharp and good and blah, blah, blah. And the New York thing was real different. You had to come to them pretty much. And that's, they were great, you know, just a different style. But Steve just was he was a show business guy.
Yeah.
And, but he loved the music so much. I mean, and there was something about him being on that stage that made everything well again.
Yeah. You know? We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about O'Rourke's too.
O'Rourke's.
So,
right.
So don't go away on Nocturnal General with Eddie Holstein.
When will I ever learn? He gives me everything I need and more. When will I ever?
I can't get that out of my head, Eddie. That's been my concert experience of the year. I saw Bill Murray, this little spoken word music thing he's doing at the Chicago Theater, and that's a Van Morrison song, and it was really
good. Has he done your show?
I'd love to get Bill Murray on, but I'm excited about, you've been hearing the spots for the Van Morrison trip we're doing at the end of September to Dublin and Belfast and stuff. And I've never been, we're talking during the break, I've never been to Ireland. But I've been to O'Rourke's.
Yes.
The old O'Rourke's is the closest I've got.
It's like being in Israel and Ireland at the same time.
But tell us, again, the listeners who don't know, we don't have a whole lot of time, but you were at O'Rourke's, you were saying, 90 to 97?
I had the new O'Rourke's. I was there from August 1990. We opened there at the end of the summer, and then until about 2008, I think.
January. When did they close?
A couple years later. They stayed open a couple years after me.
Was it 2000? Really?
It was maybe 2007. I forgot. I worked there about 7 years.
But O'Rourke's, I mean, what was the deal there? I mean, they had the Irish literary figures. I remember talking to
Willie, who originally, no, I'm sorry, it was Bruce Oxford.
Okay.
Bruce Oxford was one of these really creative guys that got into the bar business, and it became different. It wasn't just boxing on TV and a couple of guys hanging around. He was a poet himself, so I think he got them from a Time Life or some publication, and he owned the original O'Rourke's on Wells Street, and then Willie Carey bought it from him and moved it over to North Avenue, where they were for 30 years. Then Jay and Jeanette and Jim bought it from Willie, and then Jay had the new place.
Is the Irish literary thing, is that what led journalists there? Or, I'm sure there were theater people there, especially when they moved across the street from Steppenwolf. Yeah,
it was, somebody described it as a neighborhood bar without a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, the original O'Rourke's particularly, we had a lot of fun at the new one, but the original O'Rourke's was bigger, and it was wider, and it was a back room. And Dave Van Ronk, I used to bring him in there, and he noticed something about the place. He said, you know, New York, we've got these writer bars, we got this kind of bar, and Jimmy Breslin hangs around this place. He said, I know you got writers in this and journalists here, some, but you've got other people in here, too. He said, there's a real sense of democracy here. You got truck drivers and cab drivers, and that's what represented an old town bar.
Yeah, it was a great place. Okay, we're going to ask you to do a little bit of Don't Think Twice.
Okay.
And are you going to do this at Space? Let's plug the Space thing one more time.
Oh, yes, I will do Don't Think Twice, all right.
It's Evanston Space on Saturday evening, June 23rd, with Billy Prine and his band.
A rockabilly. They're going to rock.
It's going to be a great night. So let's hear a little bit of Don't Think Twice.
Ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. By now, ain't no use to sit and wonder why. Never do anyhow. Roosters crowing at the break of dawn. Look out my window and I'll be gone. Reason I'm traveling on. Don't think twice, it's all right. So long, goodbye, honey, baby. Where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good of a word. I'll just say fare thee well. I ain't saying treated me unkind. You could have done much better. I don't mind. You just wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's alright. Ain't no use in calling out my name like you never did before. Ain't no use in calling out my name. I can't hear it anymore. Wish there was something you would do or say. Try to change my mind, make me stay. We never did much talking anyway.